I just had a chance to see some of the damage from the historic floods here in Louisiana. We are heartbroken by the loss of life. There are also people who are still desperately trying to track down friends and family. We're going to keep on helping them every way that we can.
WikiLeaks crusade is now compromising the privacy of hundreds of innocent people. The Associated Press reports WikiLeaks published the names of teenage rape victims, people who have HIV and hepatitis, marriage certificates, and the name of a Saudi Arabian man arrested for being gay.
Villages across central Italy virtually wiped off the map by a devastating 6.2 magnitude quake. The quake struck near the town of Norcia in Umbria, 140 kilometres northeast of Rome, and just 50 kilometres from L'Aquila.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, and it's August 24th, 2016. 5:10. Good morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day midweek as we head through, seems like a fast week so far, but lots going on today. Of course, our eyes are all on Italy after that massive earthquake overnight, and we'll continue to follow the latest from there. Vic Vaughn will keep us posted from the newsroom, and we'll bring you any developments on that as soon as we get them throughout not just this broadcast, but through the rest of the morning as well. Later in the broadcast, we're apparently saving more for retirement, especially the older segment of our population. We'll talk to an expert about a new study that's out about that. And Walmart versus Target, part two. We'll have more of that conversation as well this morning. But first, to the WGN Market Desk, here's your overnight intel from around the globe. Asian stocks meandered today as investors awaited fresh cues from the Federal Reserve on what they're going to do about interest rates. Markets steady following the submarine launch of a ballistic missile by North Korea and the earthquake in Turkey. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrials rose about 17 points. The Standard & Poor's climbed about 4. The NASDAQ added about 15. This morning, the futures on Wall Street are pointing toward modest gains later this morning, up just about 17 points this hour. S&P and NASDAQ futures up as well today. More indications that perhaps there will be an interest rate hike this year. The betting now is that it could happen in September or December. There is also discussion that it may not happen at all. And one of the experts talking about that is Panmure Gordon. He's a chief economist at Simon & French. And he tells the Reuters news agency,
I don't think we'll see a rise from the Fed this year. The risks are asymmetrical. There are no real strong inflationary indicators to the upside, either in the labor market or through the commodity route.
Yesterday, another Fed chairman said, another Federal Reserve president also suggested that perhaps it may be a wait and see, and perhaps there will not be an interest rate. But we've heard several of those other presidents from around the country who've been out floating trial balloons preparing the markets for just that. Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen will give a speech on Friday in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Also today, the Best Buy is really surprised. A lot of investors reporting higher than expected quarterly profit and a raised outlook. One of the capital partners at FBB Capital Partners was talking about this yesterday.
It is pretty surprising. I think a lot of investors really did not anticipate any meaningful bounce out of Best Buy. This one's been sort of a deep value name that's sort of gone up and down. We've seen them do a meaningful restructuring. I think a lot of investors really thought that that part of the story was over. We wouldn't see any meaningful beats or raises coming out of the company. So it is a bit surprising.
Online sales were helped by faster shipping and improvements in the checkout process, and a better search, and sales at established stores, a beat analyst expectation. The best sellers at Best Buy, by the way, include smartwatches, home theater systems, appliances, and computing. If you're with us on the broadcast yesterday, we were having a conversation about Walmart, and the people who are buying groceries tend to be going there instead of Target. Target is trying to fight this, obviously. Target is one of the retailers struggling these days. Will it be a brick-and-mortar store in the future? Will it try to follow the model that's been put forth? Dale Buss is a brand reporter. He writes for Brand Channel, also for Forbes, other publications, and he's been writing a little bit about this. He's with us this morning on the opening bell. Dale, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, good to have you always. You know, yesterday our discussion was about Walmart and how they seem to be doing things right. People, for whatever reason, like to go to Walmart to get their groceries. Most people live near Walmart. Unbelievably. But Target is trying, though, right?
Well, yeah, interestingly, Target has been emphasizing groceries for at least the last couple of years. The new CEO from during that period, Brian Cornell, has been emphasizing groceries because he really needed to figure out how to get Target's mojo back. I mean, the chain started having problems. A few years ago, you know, Target used to be kind of the retailer of choice for millennials. There was a sense that Target was fashion forward, you know, progressive, kind of for the person who might be lower middle class, say, but on the rise, whereas Walmart's reputation was for people who were kind of stuck there, maybe. And one of the things that Brian Cornell did is say, you know, if we can become more of a super center kind of location, like a Walmart, or people in the Midwest are familiar with Meijer, of course, then that's one way that we can kind of get out of the rut that Target was in. The problem with that, though, is that as they've done this, is that people don't think of Target as a destination for groceries. So Cornell has done a bunch of things to try to address that, you know, expanded the space that he's dedicated to groceries in Target. He's also heavily emphasized organic foods, all natural foods, that kind of thing. The problem has been, and it's been evident in the most recent quarterly results, is that people still are just not used to thinking of Target as that super center destination. And so they've actually had a problem with fresh produce kind of getting stale because there just aren't enough shoppers who visit Target often enough to buy groceries to support that kind of operation. So it's a real quandary for Target right now.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Some good news on the housing front. New home sales are up. The Commerce Department says they jumped nearly 12.5% last month, the fastest pace in 9 years. Elon Musk is at it again. On Tuesday, the Tesla CEO announcing a new battery pack that can power its cars from 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds. He also announced a new version of the Model S powered by that battery. It's not cheap. Price tag, $134,000. Call it a war of the razors. Procter & Gamble, maker of the Gillette Mach 3, suing Edgewell Personal Care, which owns Schick Razors and Edge Shave Gels. The lawsuit over patent infringement and misleading claims on packaging for new razors. Edgewell says the allegations are baseless. Lawmakers demanding more information as to why the price for life-saving EpiPens has skyrocketed. Senator Charles Grassley wrote to Mylan, which makes the devices, asking why the cost is now more than $600. 9 years ago, less than 60. Dave Packer, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Our conversation this morning focusing on Target and the future of that retailer in the wake of news about Walmart and now Best Buy.
Target shares are down 4% after it reported a 1.1% decline in comparable sales in the second quarter and lowered its forecast for the rest of the year, including the busy holiday.
That's how the news reported it last week. Actually, Target saw a bump in its shares, but since leveled off a little bit. Dale Buss, writer Brand Channel, is with us this morning. He's been writing about this. Dale, I'm curious to get your take on this because in the wake of the news that Best Buy did really, really well, that may not bode well for Target.
Yeah, it's interesting. Best Buy obviously has had a bumpy ride the last several years. And I think what you're seeing happen in general here is kind of a bifurcation among retailers. And everybody's investors and everybody else are trying to figure out what's happening. Is the economy just kind of barely bumps along and consumers continue to be pressed, you have a real interesting divide between, for example, department stores such as Macy's, which has said that it's going to close a bunch of stores, and Target kind of joining the group of those struggling. And then others which are doing pretty well, which include specialty retailers like Home Depot, which has continued to do very well, and TJX, which owns Marshalls and TJ Maxx, again, kind of a specialty retailer, especially one functioning in that affordable niche. So it's been interesting to see how Best Buy has mounted a comeback. You know, they managed to get up off the mat, and just a lot of people were not expecting Target to be one of those retailers that struggled again. And it's kind of interesting. In that role, they've sort of reversed places with Walmart, which, you know, was struggling a couple of years ago and has managed to also, like Best Buy, get up off the mat.
So let me throw this out at you, because we talked about the groceries aspect of this and how Target is trying to compete with Walmart. Here's the impression that I get just from a personal, as somebody who does shop at Target. Whenever I turn the aisle to the grocery area, it just seems like a throwaway. It just seems like one aisle, maybe one and a half aisles, at least at the Target I shop at. It's almost like they don't make an effort, at least at that store. Is that something that needs to be focused on, or are there other bigger stores that do it better?
Well, that's what Brian Cornell has been saying, is we need to make this an emphasis and do it quickly. And he really has been attacking that over the last couple of years. I'm not sure about your particular store, but the one I shop at, I'm in Michigan, you know, has dramatically expanded the amount of attention that they pay to groceries. But it is, I think, kind of a mindset thing. I mean, you can be a shopper and go in there and keep kind of noticing, wow, you know, Target's got fresh organic bananas now. They didn't have those last week. You know, wow, Target's got twice as many boxes of ready-to-eat cereal as they had. But if Target, in your mind, has not been a destination for groceries, you know, sort of traditionally or in the shopping habits you formed over the years, it's really hard to get people to change their minds about something like that. And still, the grocery sections in even the most ambitious Target stores on this account are just not anywhere near what they are at, say, a Walmart Supercenter, where it's very clear that, you know, this is both a supermarket / grocery store as well as a discounter for everything else.
At the conference call for the quarterly earnings last week, there were investors, people on the line who don't seem to have a lot of patience. How much what kind of hot seat is the CEO, Brian Cornell, in?
Well, I think he is in a bit of a hot seat. Interestingly, you know, he had shown some progress over the last couple of years, and people kind of attached themselves to his vision. But now I think all that is in trouble. And I don't know if this is something you want to get into or not, but I think another factor for Target clearly has been that they've turned off a lot of shoppers with their initial reaction to the whole transgender debate by saying, you know, we're just going to let transgender individuals use whichever restroom corresponds with their gender identity. I mean, that really, really hurt Target in the sense of an organized boycott and also, you know, just creating questions in the minds of many shoppers. Target just this week, in concert with their earnings announcement, said, okay, we're going to spend $20 million. We're going to add a private bathroom to each of our stores by next year to try and address this problem. But they really haven't addressed in that the, you know, kind of the reputational damage that that they've done for the brand in the minds of many consumers.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out in the coming weeks and months. Target here, at least in Chicago, doesn't have a lot of competition from Walmart. It's a big city that hasn't really embraced Walmart, so that's, you know, that might help them here, but it's certainly not the case elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's true. And it's just kind of interesting how Walmart has managed to come back. A lot of people doubted, you know, they thought Walmart's heyday was over, but Walmart has done some things like, you know, they boosted pay for their employees. They themselves have emphasized groceries and sort of maybe upscale organic and natural products a little bit more than before. So the dynamic really has flipped even from a year ago. So it just continues to be interesting. And you know, we're in a period of the economy where the consumer dollar is just really held on to tightly by many Americans. So these choices are very, very important for these chains. And, you know, Brian Cornell, is at kind of a crossroads now.
D.L. Buss is a writer for Brand Channel and others, including Forbes, talking with us today about Target and their strategy going forward. You can read more of his writing at brandchannel.com and follow him on Twitter at D.L. D. Buss. D.L., thanks for being with us this morning.
You bet. Thanks.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, a carry-on that carries people.
Motorbag is going to change the way the world travels.
Walking around the airport can be tiring, especially if you're lugging around a bunch of bags. What about if the bag lugs you?
You go from a regular, carry-on, and then simply pop in your handles. You deploy your handlebars, lock. Hit your power button, and you're off.
The Moto Bag is like a regular suitcase, except it transforms into a mini vehicle that you can ride around the airport on. It gets up to speeds of 8 miles an hour and can go for 8 miles on a single charge. It's a bit smaller than your normal bag, though, with only 85% the storage space of a full-sized bag. Kevin O'Donnell is the bag's creator.
2 years, quit everything else, sold buildings, sold cars, and...
Awesome. The Moto Bag ships next year, and it will cost $1,500 or an even $1,000 if you pre-order on Indiegogo. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:38 as we continue our broadcast this morning. There are a couple of new reports about savings and also debt. First, let me tell you a little bit about debt. Millennials are apparently shunning any kind of debt, especially credit cards. Their reluctance to pull out the plastic is having some repercussions on the financial system and the economy. Latest report says that millennials just absolutely do not like to use their credit cards. That is almost as good as saving. And the new report out from Bankrate.com says more people are doing just that. As a matter of fact, retirement saving is at a record level. And joining us on the Opening Bell this morning is Greg McBride. He's a chief financial analyst at Bankrate. Greg, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
Well, this is absolutely nice to hear that people, instead of spending money, I know the economy probably doesn't like it, but they're actually saving money for their retirement. What do the numbers say?
Yeah, finally a little bit of good news on retirement savings, huh? We've been looking at this the last several years and basically gauging whether or not people were saving more or less for retirement than they had the year before. And when we first asked this question back in 2011, it was a much different story. The people that had actually scaled back their retirement contributions outnumbered those that had increased it by nearly a 2-to-1 margin. And we've seen steady improvement in that over the past several years. But this year, some really good news. Not only did we find that those that have increased their retirement savings over the last year, the highest it's been in those 5 years we've been looking at it, but the percentage of people that hadn't contributed either this year or the year before, that is the lowest it's been in that five-year period. So I think both of those readings really indicative of an economy that's improving, where more people are working, but I think most importantly, people are starting to earn more, and therefore they're beginning to save a little bit more.
Bankrate's Financial Security Index shows 21% of people are saving more for retirement. Are those people all across this spectrum, or are they generally older adults?
I mean, it was across the spectrum, but when we take a little bit deeper dive into it and we look at different age groups, I mean, there are a couple things that reveal themselves. I mean, those that were most inclined to be increasing their retirement savings over the past year were those in Generation X, that's those between the ages of 36 and 51, followed by younger millennials, those that are just getting started in the workforce, those between the ages of 18 and 25. That's very good news because they've got time on their side. If they get in the habit of increasing their retirement contributions now, I think that bodes well for their financial futures. What was a little bit more troubling was those that were scaling back. And we found a higher tendency to scale back retirement contributions over the last year among younger baby boomers. And, those are, you're in or near your peak earning years. That's the time where you ought to be taking advantage of catch-up contributions, really setting yourself up for retirement. So to see people scaling back or having a higher propensity to scale back at that point, you know, that doesn't bode well for the future.
What do the numbers say about how people are feeling about the economy and the recovery after 2008? Are people still nervous? And is that why they're sort of gradually kind of moving out of this fear factor, for lack of a better way to describe it?
We've seen improvement on a number of fronts. I mean, in terms of job security, people feeling more and more secure in their jobs. The people that feel more secure in their job today relative to a year ago, outnumber those feeling less secure by about a 2-to-1 margin. Net worth is another one. Now, you know, we've seen house prices rebound. The stock market continues to hit record highs. And so net worth, people saying their net worth has increased, outnumber those that say their net worth has fallen also by a 2-to-1 margin over the last year. People also feel more comfortable with their debt. They've refinanced, they've paid down, paid off debt. So that debt burden is lighter than it has been in years. In fact, when you measure it as a percentage of monthly income, the lowest it's been in the more than 35 years that the Federal Reserve has been tracking that. So there has been improvement on a number of fronts. But I think, you know, when it really boils down to it, Steve, is until people see more money in their paycheck, they don't feel like the economic recovery has landed at their doorstep. Unfortunately, more and more people are finally starting to see a little bit more money show up in the paycheck. And as a result, we're starting to see more people beginning to feel better about the economy and beginning to move the needle on savings.
I mentioned this separate research that shows millennials are reluctant to use credit cards and they want to pay off their debt that they have. In a lot of circles, that's just as good as saving, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, we've had very consistent findings with that. We've found in years past about 60% of millennials don't even have a credit card, and they do have an aversion to debt. They're not as consumption focused as a lot of their predecessors, and they do have more of a mentality towards savings. I think all of those good, solid financial habits that are being formed now, that I do think bode very well for their financial futures.
One of the other things that I saw in the Bankrate research is that employers apparently are expanding their 401k matches. That's good news too, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think has really helped in terms of not only getting people to save for retirement, but also helping push the contributions higher on a year-over-year basis are things like auto enrollment and auto escalation, where new employees are automatically defaulted into the plan and the amount they're contributing automatically ratchets up 1 percentage point per year unless they take action otherwise. And I think that's great because, you know, otherwise a lot of people, inertia is a powerful thing. You drop a packet of paperwork on their desk and ask them to sign up, a lot of times they don't do that. And what may motivate them in some of those cases is whether or not there's an employer match. Well, in tough economic times, employers scaled back that match. So there were people that they weren't contributing because the match wasn't as attractive. If you get into a better economic environment, some of those employer match programs start to look a little bit better. I think that can only help not only employee participation, but ultimately their future financial security as well.
One of the stories, one of the people that you talked to in your story that you've posted to Bankrate.com was one guy who just puts in like $100 per paycheck and doesn't think about it. I mean, that's not a lot when you think of other people who are saving a real lot of money, but it out of mind, out of sight, a little bit here, a little bit there.
That's really the key. You have to automate this. And, you know, the old expression is very true. Pay yourself first. Have that money go to work for you right out of the paycheck before you have a chance to see it, before you have a chance to spend it. If you wait until the end of the month and try to save what's left over, too often there's nothing left over. But if you accomplish that saving first, have a direct deposit from your paycheck into a retirement savings account, you've accomplished that saving before you even get out of bed on payday morning. And then you're forcing yourself to live on less than you make, which over time is really the essence of building wealth.
All of this is certainly people, I think, in the economy, economists would rather people be spending money out in the retail world and on stuff that doesn't seem to be happening in big ways. So this is a double-edged sword, is it not?
Yeah, it is. It's called the paradox of thrift, that, you know, if everybody scales back their spending, that, you know, the economy would suffer in the short term. But now, I'm going to take the long view on this one. And I think that, you know, long term, we're all better off if Americans have more savings and less debt, because that leads to a more sustainable pace of spending on a go forward basis. Our economy is 70% tied to consumer spending. And we saw, you know, over the last 10 years, the effect of, you know, when we artificially boost what people can spend through those crazy financing in the housing market and record low interest rates. It's not sustainable, right? That what it really boils down to is, you know, people will spend on a sustainable basis. They have the ability to do so and feel comfortable about their financial situation. So to me, you know, people boosting savings, kind of getting their financial house in order, I think is a good thing for the long run, even if it meant a little bit of a painful economic adjustment in the short run.
Greg McBride is Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. You can follow him at, I believe it's Bankrate Greg, right, on Twitter?
Yeah, that's my Twitter handle, yes.
And then also at Bankrate, at Bankrate. You can find more at Bankrate.com as well. Greg, thanks for being with us again on The Opening Bell.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve. Have a great day.
You too.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Market Desk. This morning, Dow futures are pointing toward a modest tepid open on Wall Street when the opening bell rings later. Dow futures up just 5 points. S&P NASDAQ futures higher as well. Around the globe this morning, in London, the market's lower. In Germany, the markets are higher. And in Asia overnight, the Nikkei up almost a full percent, up 99 points. In the Hang Seng, also higher overnight. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve, and good morning to all of you. As we look ahead to next week, keep in mind, Farm Progress Show, Boone, Iowa, next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And at noontime, stop by the ADM tent. Max Armstrong and the band and I will be there all 3 days. Now, the cattle market, seventh day in a row of a losing streak for August live cattle futures, down 17 cents at $113.25. Bids for cash cattle surfaced in Texas and Kansas at $115. Sellers asking more than $120. And lower cash and wholesale pork prices pulled down lean hogs as well. The October contract ended 62 cents lower, and December down 52 cents a hundredweight. Turning to the grain trade, some of the traders still talking about an improvement in corn conditions in the weekly report this late in the growing season. That's what happened yesterday when the Department of Agriculture, I should say Monday, when the Department of Agriculture released its report. But because of that, corn hit a one-week low on improved crop conditions across the Midwest. And on Thursday, we'll get the report on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. That four-day tour ends on Thursday. Again, I'll warn you, in Streeter, Illinois, coming your way Saturday night for the Agriculture Development Symposium to bring local farmers and citizens of Streeter together for social hour, dinner, and then I guess I'll preach to you for a while, and that'll be at the Eastwood Country Club. So see you there Saturday night in Streeter, Illinois. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Reverend Orion, thank you very much. Have a good day as well. A couple of final notes before we leave you in the opening bell today. Domino's Pizza apparently is a big hit with millennials. Yesterday, earnings release saw stock hit an all-time high, $151 a share. The shares are up 35% in 2016 alone. Domino's apparently aggressively looking for millennials, and it's paying off. They have reported really good revenue, and so who would have thunk it? Domino's doing well among millennials. Also yesterday, big story we want to mention to you, the number of traffic deaths nationally so far this year has jumped 9% in just the first 6 months of the year compared to the same period last year. Debbie Herzman is a traffic specialist with the Federal Traffic Safety Highway Council.
When we look at the highway fatalities, these numbers are huge. 19,000 people killed in the first 6 months. This is the equivalent of having two major airliners go down every week. The most dangerous thing most of us do every day is get behind the wheel of a car.
That is 19,100 deaths overall. Herzman, by the way, the CEO of the National Safety Council. The numbers, she says, unacceptable. She says most of these fatalities are in less populated states. People are driving distracted. A number of reasons to blame for this. But again, traffic deaths surging for the second year in a row early on in 2016.